Hello, this is Jacqueline Machard. Welcome to my Summer Scribes series. That's a lot of alliteration. I'm a writer and an editor, and I love to talk to writers and editors about writing, my favorite subject, and about the process of delivering the wonder of books to people who love to read. And today I'm very lucky in that I have one of New York's premier agents, literary agents, on the telephone with me. His name is Jeff Kleinman, and he is the co-founder of Folio Lit, a wonderful agency that handles many powerful and many productive and wonderful authors and manages their books. So I'm going to talk to him about books and about what agents do for writers and how they function in their lives. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. It's so cool to be here.
It's so cool to have you. The first question that all my friends ask me when I do a conference or a lecture is, do you really need an agent? And I always say, at a certain point, yes, you do, absolutely, if you want to publish your book in a traditional way. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. I think you need an agent if you want to get your book into, you remember those things called bookstores? You remember those, right?
I remember.
I think if you want that kind of a distribution, you want to make sure it's in print and an ebook, and it's in Utah and Texas and Florida and Maine, as well as possibly internationally, you still need those regular traditional book publishers, and that's when you work with agents. So there are lots and lots of times when agents are really not the most effective. I train horses, and so one of the things that I do when I want a book about horses is I go to my local tack shop to get the book. I don't go to Barnes & Noble or to Tattered Cover or to another one of the great bookstores out there. I buy my book from a tack shop. So if you are writing a book that has a specific niche, like horses or educational books sometimes or policing, you don't necessarily go to bookstores to get those books. And if that's the case, then having an agent or going out, reaching out to an agent is probably not going to be the most effective way of spending your time.
So if I'm writing a book that I intend to sell to people to train their puppy or to make a plant hanger with macrame that I will travel around to macrame and puppy shows to sell directly to people, I don't necessarily need to ask someone to help me to get that published, because there are many ways to, as they call it, self-publish a book like that.
Yes. However, the difference with like dog training versus horse training is that there aren't, I don't necessarily think you have to go to PetSmart or a pet store to buy books on training animals, training your dog, where horse people are sort of a special niche. But yeah, especially if you have your own built-in market that you're going to sell directly to, a lot of times you can self-publish it. The downside to that is that sometimes, no matter how hard you work at that, it still looks like it was printed on somehow cheaper paper. The cover doesn't quite look believable. So it can undermine you, but that's, you know, a minor quibble.
Let's talk about the kind of publishing that I think my listeners are most interested in and that I'm most interested in, which is traditional publishing. You write a wonderful book, or you're working on a wonderful novel, and or a wonderful piece of creative nonfiction, and the time it comes when you need to find a place for that book to be published and enter the larger world of bookstores, of traditional online markets. Tell me about what that looks like for the author. Where do you go to meet you?
Where do I go to meet me? God.
Yeah.
Like, I get up in the middle of the night and there I am. It's just horrible.
I know how that is.
I think the best way of figuring out, you decide that your book has national scope. You think it can appeal to not just a clear demographic, but hopefully a clear demographic plus additional people, that it makes sense to go not just regional or specialty presses, but to a national audience. I think the first thing I would probably end up doing is go find books that I really feel are close to mine. So by doing that, I totally love independent bookstores. So this is not at all, what I'm about to say, any kind of detriment to independent bookstores. But Barnes & Noble, for whatever reason, has a wider kind of range to begin with as a place to start. So I would go to my local Barnes & Noble, and I would find the books out there that are most similar to mine. I would look for books that have similar themes, an author with similar credentials, or a voice that is somehow similar to mine, or maybe all three of the above, depending on what genre we're looking at. And then I'd look at the acknowledgments and see who the agent is, because most authors thank their agent in the acknowledgments. So that's probably where I would start. Now, the other thing, and I know this sounds really goofy, is I would not go to an online source like BNN.com or Amazon.com to do that same research. For whatever reason, every time I've ever done this, I have better luck going to the print and the books, the bricks and mortar bookstore. Something about the Amazon algorithm doesn't necessarily come up with the right books. And so for you to stand there and pull the book off the shelf and look at it and look at the voice and look at the author's credentials on the back page, you'll get a better result.
And then I find out where that person is. I turn to a trusty source like Writer's Digest or some other, or just the, you know, or just go online and find out if that agent represents the kind of book that I have written, and if that person is accepting new clients.
Yeah, and I would probably make a list of about 30 agents, ideally, and then separate them into groups A, B, and C. So group A are the people you really think would be ideal. Group B are the people that would be okay. And group C is if it's dark and your eyes are closed, it would be okay too. And then send a couple of these of what are called query letters, cover letters, to each of these people. So maybe 10 out of the 30. And you tell them about the book. And then you kind of see what happens. I wouldn't just go to the – what a lot of agents do is they – I'm sorry, what a lot of authors do is they make the mistake of going to their top choices first, all top choices. And what almost always is the case is authors query too early. They approach agents too early. The book isn't quite ready. And because they've done that and they've already gone out to those agents, that door is closed. And so they end up feeling sort of flailing around, going to less and less effective agents. So I would strongly suggest you don't do that.
So backing up, if how do I... You are one of those agents. There are two kinds of agents in my experience. I guess there are many kinds. But in my experience, and I'm generalizing on the basis of twice, because in my long career I've had only two agents. You're one, actually, of them.
Yay.
And yay. And I there are the agents who are deeply who want to and are very good at and skilled at getting the finished book to the marketplace. And then there are the other kind of agents who are invested in the book on a literary level, too, and will, before the ever approaching a publisher, ask for revisions to a story or to a book that the agent finds promising before it's ever ready to be ever ready to take to a potential publisher. So there must be a step even before that. How do you as a writer, say you're a new writer, I can tell when my book is bad. Well, sometimes I can tell when my book is bad or just not quite cooked yet, though I'm always very hopeful that no one else will notice. And but if I were a new writer, how would I determine whether it was time to approach the agents I hoped for most? Is it best to be part of a writing group or a writing community if you can do that?
I think step one is to be able – so I say to you, hey, Jackie, what's your book about? And I want you to tell me what the book is about in a sentence or two. So there's this whole thing, and as soon as you go online, I'm sure all your listeners will already know this. There's this thing called log lines or pitches, or they have all these crazy descriptions. I don't care about any of that stuff. This isn't like a Hollywood get the agent within two sentences kind of thing. It's this is a total editorial thing. If you can boil your book down to a sentence or two, that's one indication that you really digested it, that you really edited it and thought about it, and you can condense it. Well, my book is just too big. I can't do that. It won't let me do that. But one of those kind of comments is a lot of times, to me, an indicator that's cool, but it's just not quite ready yet. Why don't you do another draft of the revision, and let's just see what it then looks like, and maybe next time you can. So that's step one I would do. Step two, I would read the whole book aloud. Ideally, have somebody else read it aloud to you, and have them read it aloud and have them draw if you use paper, draw a vertical line with a pencil down the page, you or the person or both, just as you're reading, just sort of follow it along. And every time that person hesitates or backs up or doesn't understand, or you go, wait, hold on, I don't understand it, whatever it is, anything that makes your eyes come off that page, draw a horizontal line. That's another kind of good trick. And the third one is exactly what you said. I would completely find other writers, and not writers that you're related to. I mean, everybody says this, but find writers who maybe aren't even writing in your genre, who you aspire to be like, who write really well, who are in the trenches and fighting to make it work. If they just say, I like it, it's good, then you know they're not the right people for you. And the last thing, sorry, and I'll promise I'll stop. The last thing is, and this is my hugest pet peeve, is when you a lot of times you read this book and you're like, oh my God, I love it so much, but there's this thing and this thing isn't working. And you call the author up and say, oh my God, I love your book, but there's this thing and this thing isn't working. And the author says, oh crap, I was afraid you'd notice that. And that is the most disheartening feeling as an agent, because to me it means you know it's not ready. You know your character isn't that well done. You know the dialogue needs work, and you're just hoping that these agents or editors won't notice, because you'll put in all sorts of flowery language or you'll add extra bows or sequins. And the thing is, like, we have this sort of bizarre job, and this is our job, is to read all day long. And so our muscles are kind of exercised to read in a certain way, and we do notice. So I would really strongly suggest, if you have any kind of niggling doubts, God, I wonder if I should start with that sentence, or maybe I should put chapter 4 first. Anytime you're worried about that kind of stuff, it means it's not ready.
We don't want you to stop, because this is information that I, after 20 books, am really loving. I'm really loving hearing this, especially the part about drawing a line straight through the narrative of the book. What a wonderful tip for people to follow. And also, I've had many authors, even seasoned authors, say to me, oh, tell so-and-so if that person takes me on, I'll be willing to do lots of revision. And I always have to say, oh, you have to do all that revision on the front end before you ever approach this person or that person, because it's when a book goes to your agent, it should be as close to perfect as you possibly can make it. Now, it won't be perfect. In my experience, I know that there'll always be revisions to come before a publishing deal is made, and then there'll be revisions afterward. But I don't think new writers really may understand just how much revision is involved.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, it's revision. How do I say this? It's not just like you're sitting there revising and making, you know, just making changes and making this character deeper and all that, and making the dialogue stronger and making the story have more narrative, you know, momentum or all that kind of stuff. But it's also, and the big thing, and I think this is, if your readers, listeners, take nothing else away from this, this is what I would hope people hear. Everything these days is about voice. If you ask me what voice is, all I can say is read J.D. Salinger and Virginia Woolf. And if you confuse their sentences and can't figure out who is who, then maybe you need to think of a different career, because most people can distinguish between the two, and that's what voice is. It's that thumbprint that's distinctive that makes your voice as a writer distinctive from somebody else. And how do you do that? That's where I think all that revision stuff comes in. It's going over again and again, not just to create these great characters, but to hone your voice and make your voice itself as splendid as you can make it. So why is that important? I think I've told you this. I've had this sort of weird experience this past year where about, I think like about five or six first novels I sold. The author came to me, and we basically built the book ourselves. So they had done a draft, and we broke it all apart, and they started all over again. And we came up with the plot, or we came up with the narrative arc, or like we literally built it. I can't do that in most cases, but I can totally do it if I have an author who has a really special voice. Then I can sit down with them and I can say, okay, let's create this character, let's create this arc, let's do this. And they have to be receptive to wanting to do it, and you know, if the book really works, then you don't need to. But lately I just haven't gotten those books that are just ready to go. And so, you know, it's to me it's a lot of fun to sit down and figure out, okay, so who is this character really? What are you really trying to say? Oh, well, I meant to say this. Well, that's not coming out in the book at all, so let's make the plot go this way. Or what do you think about this? And they say, oh, that's so much better, and what if we do this? And then it becomes a dialogue. So all that's that's a crazy way of conducting a business, and my business partner Scott constantly yells at me about ROI, the return on investment. But on the other side of the coin, it's totally fun. And if you have an author who has that distinctiveness of voice, it is so rewarding to watch it. Like, all of a sudden, that book, it's there. Like, where did this come from? And that's pretty cool.
I'm hearing another side of that, too. And that is the willingness to, it has taken many people a long time to get to that first draft, to finally see the end, to finally see the other side of the mountain. And maybe, as sometimes is true, they're played out. They're tired of the process. And it's discouraging. I know people who hear, well, it needs another, you need to do another draft. They just don't want to hear that at that point. And is that somewhere that separates the sheep from the lambs in terms of who's going to be able to go the distance as a writer?
I think that willingness? All the time. I think because one of the other things that you get when you're not like building a novel from scratch is you send the author notes and you say, look, it's going to be at least 6 to 8 months of you working on this thing. So they work on it for 6 months, send it back, and then there's more issues that come up. And so then you send it back to them again. But as opposed to taking 6 months, it does need another 6 months. It takes them three. And then the next time they send it back, they're sending it in 6 weeks. And then, you know, they're sending it in a week. And they're sick of it. They want to get it off their plate, and they want to kind of move forward. And I, as an agent, struggle so hard because all I can do is set it out what I think is as absolutely strong as you can make it. And when you know this book is so lovely and the writer is so talented and you know it's not ready, is this most sickening feeling. And it's hard to figure out how to articulate that to an author, and it's hard to find an author that's really ready to kind of go and say, either, no, Jeff, you're wrong, it should be this way, and kind of really edit themselves, or really just dive in as deeply as it needs to go. So I don't know. I mean, I just feel like on some level it's all about voice, and if you just put it on the page beautifully, then we're set. And
no matter how many tries it's going to take to get the story there, having that strong voice is key. Let me ask another question. People always ask about what the process of publication looks like, and maybe my listeners are more sophisticated than that, but tell me what it looks like in terms of a timeline. We just talked about revision, but once you have that product and it's ready to take to the editors that you've identified, and your job is to know what book is right for what publisher, correct?
That's one job, yes, ma'am.
Okay, tell me about that and what it looks like when you've identified that editor for my book or for Joe Nolan's book and how that looks in terms of time and effort on your part and the writer's part.
All right, let me do
and
best
the editor's
case.
Part.
Yeah, let me go do best case scenario first because it's like the most fun. And that is I take on books basically when three things are happening. Thing one is I miss my subway stop reading it, and I really do. You're sitting there, and suddenly you realize, you know, crap, all this time has gone by. Where have you been? Second thing is you gush about it to any poor slob who will listen. And for me, that means I lie awake in bed at night, or I'm brushing my teeth in the morning, and I say to my wife, oh, my God, you wouldn't believe this book I just read. Books are sold by a word of mouth. So if I'm not talking about the book, then the concern is that maybe the eventual reader won't either. And the third one for me is to have that editor in mind for this book and think, okay, so-and-so would be perfect for it. So I have all those three things happening, let's say, and usually what happens is I identify a day to go out with it. I like doing Thursdays, like Thursdays seem like
they're my lucky day. I don't know why. Thursday's the best day.
See, told ya. So Thursday to me is good because if I get somebody really motivated, they'll read it and be back in touch Friday. They'll certainly be back in touch Monday. But sometimes, this is like, I'm planning around with it Thursday, but I just can't wait because the book is ready and I'm so excited. And so you call the editors up, you call up a handful, you call up to, you know, whatever number of editors, you tell them about the book, you send the project to them, and then you wait. Normally with me, people, I have to wait a couple of days to hear from them because they have to, you know, read it. But it's very, very fun, and I've had it happen several times where you send it at 10 o'clock in the morning, and by 1 in the afternoon you're already getting phone calls from editors saying, holy crap, I love this. So that's the ideal situation, is it happens very, very quickly. In a couple of weeks, you generally have, you know, publishers kind of lining up to decide if they want to buy the book and that kind of thing. So that's my ideal.
What does that look like? Now, everybody thinks that with their first novel, they'll make at least $1 million. tell me what it really looks like in terms of what I heard you say once, and I can even remember the figures, but I'd like you to say that sometimes people can expect to an offer from a publisher of between what and what for a wonderful novel.
A great novel, I think, will go from anywhere from zero to like $2 or $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a nice spread.
Okay.
So I think generally the average number is somewhere between 5 and 50. But the thing is publishing has gotten so weird, and everybody wants a novel that has two things. Thing one is, I bet you can guess, is voice. And thing two is that great premise you haven't heard before. And when you have both of those things and they really line up and they really deliver, it gets crazy. It gets crazy really, really fast. It feels like publishers are publishing less, but they're putting more incentive on the books that they want to make work. So it can be
so
fun.
That great premise, and sometimes it seems to occur, and I don't know why this is, that great premise is occurring with a couple of books that are coming simultaneously into the marketplace. That happened with the book about what it would look like if the girl grew up who had been part of the Manson family, like with Emma Klein's book, and
yes,
some other stories that were just like that and might have been equally well written that came into the marketplace at the same time. Beth Hahn's book, The Singing Bone. Sometimes it seems as though ideas occur in the universe and their time is right.
It does feel that way, and what sucks is if there's two or three of them and you're one of them and you're just terrified you're not going to get to market first. But I would strongly suggest readers don't get too focused on that because there are, what's the number? It's like 6.3 million books published every year, and this happens
dear.
Maybe three or four. So, like, the odds are pretty limited. So don't get too focused on that kind of thing. That includes self-publishing.
Let me ask you something else. You go to a great many... you go to schools, you go to writers' conferences, you go to writers' retreats, and you help nurture and teach writers as part of your work. And I know that your business partner probably doesn't want to know that either because you should just be in the office selling books. But I know a great many writers, and the writers' conference phenomenon has come on us more in the past 5 or 6 years. And for some people, for some writers who are hobbyists, it's almost a recreational event. You go to see your friends who've gone to this conference before, and you go to a lovely destination, and you talk about that book that's been cooking in your life for a decade. For other people, it's a really seems to be an increasingly effective way to meet agents and editors. Can you talk about that?
I've there's a thing called a one-on-one pitch that they lock agents in a room, and you get to meet authors one-on-one. And authors, I know, really like that because then they feel like they're getting this FaceTime with people. It drives me nuts because you can talk about your book till you're blue in the face. Ideally, you'll have it in a couple sentences. But then once you do, it's all about the voice. So I know it can be effective. The reason I go is because, A, it keeps me grounded and makes me remember that, you know, because it's so easy. You get so much stuff in the mail that it's so easy to sort of reject it, and it's easier. It's better, I feel like, when you have a person behind it, and then you're remembering this is this person who spent all this time and energy writing it, and then to just sort of cavalierly reject it makes me feel a little bit meaner. So, I mean, it makes me feel bad about myself, which I think is good. So that's one of the reasons I go. But the other reason that I go is because I really feel like I talk to so many writers, not like beginning writers, but like writers who've been doing this for a while and have all these great insights into how to create good characters or tips for voice or tips for momentum or like whatever it is. I feel like if I can go to these conferences and talk to people and sort of throw these ideas out there, maybe one out of 3,000 people will listen to me and maybe their character will be better. So that's why I go.
Okay. And so I don't necessarily go to this writer's conference in California or this one in New York expecting that I'm going to meet the agent of my dreams and my publishing career is going to be sealed. The more likely scenario is that it happens in the more traditional way. So you're looking for voice. You're looking for a novel. You're looking for a writer. And you're looking for that tremendous voice. Are you looking for a writer who has more than one book in him or her?
Yes, ideally. But you want the author who has more than one book in them that hopefully is going to then create a career. So it's great if you want to write an essay collection and a cookbook and a poetry, illustrated poetry magazine. But I need something that, you know, one can follow the other and you can build an audience. So that's ideally what I'm looking for.
And you want to represent writers over the length of a career. I hear more and more agents say that what they're interested in is representing an individual book. And, of course, everyone's interested in representing an individual book initially. But should you be looking for an agent, if you're looking for an agent, if you're out there listening to this, who is interested in you over the course of a career?
I think most agents are. I think we really are. You don't want to have a million different clients and a million different books. You want to be working with the same people. The problem is that very often the same people want to write such different things, or it feels like agents, there's enough of us out there that writers feel, I think mistakenly, that we can be disposable. Like, oh, well, I want to write romance now, so I'll just find a romance agent because I know you don't do that. So I think it kind of goes both ways.
If you have one, we don't have very much time left. And the first thing I would do is ask you if you'll come back on my show at some point, because we barely got to scrape the outside of the book in terms of an agent and writer relationship. But if you have one great piece of advice for my readers out or my listeners out there who are readers and writers, what is it in terms of the next step in your process? Is it finish the book first and be patient with it?
No.
What is it?
What I probably would do is I would figure out how to make sure what I am saying, the words I'm actually putting on the page, are the bestest words I could possibly use, that they sound so much like me and sound so... they just make the page vibrate. How do you go about doing that? I think that's what I would focus on, is how to make those sentences in those emails you send out just vibrate with life. And that doesn't mean they're more pompous or anything else. It means that they're just authentic. How can you be as authentic as possible as a writer? And that's what I would focus on most. Because everything
else will come. All right, well, thank you. Thank you so much. This has been Jeff Kleinman, co-founder of Folio Lit, a wonderful, powerful literary agency. And this is Jacqueline Machard, my Summer Scribe series. We'll be back next Wednesday. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jackie.
Bye.